and Sally's.
All right. So if anybody's watching right now, and there are many people watching, so I'm lying. We've had a great deal of need for the BizSpark show to keep addressing these PR topics and marketing topics because, as our guest today will know, BizSpark works with over 45,000 companies around the world in 154 countries. Many of them are bootstrap startups, and they're trying to get their name out there, and they're trying to grow traction, and they're trying to gain customers. So I thought I'd bring into the room tonight, the studio, Rebecca Iliff, who's on my right. She's director of product at AirPR. You may remember her from a previous show we did with Maren Donovan, who is the CEO of Zirtual. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thanks for having me back.
Okay, you're welcome. And we have a prestigious guest on my left, Doug Free, who has for four years helped the BizSpark program and the startups in the BizSpark program, getting recognition and visibility and introductions to investors. A lot of things that a lot of people think PR people don't do, you've been doing. And we've brought you on the show as an old school veteran to kind of have this debate about not only what is happening in the PR world and the new media world, but what do startup founders need to be thinking about to get the attention of the people who are out there who will give them business, essentially.
Thanks, Doug. Pleased to be here.
Is there anything else I should know about your background? Just what makes you a veteran, by the way, of PR?
Age, a lot of mistakes. So yeah. That was a kind way of doing it. But, yeah, I've been doing marketing
get closer.
And PR in high-tech companies for a couple decades, pre-social media. And I've been in three different startups, all of which where I assembled the marketing team. So I've had a lot of different roles, both as a consultant in public companies and in startups. So done a lot of different things.
Okay.
And do a lot of different things at Microsoft.
Okay. And that's something I want to focus on to begin this conversation. That PR, that acronym that everybody knows, first of all, it doesn't stand just for a press release. And PR is not essentially just public relations. It's not just handing a press release to a press person and saying this is what the startup does or this is what the company does. Let's start with a broad definition. Rebecca, with you first, what working definition do you use when you're working with clients and kind of discussing what PR is and what they should be doing?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been having this conversation a lot lately with startups. We probably filter about 20 or 30 a week through the AirPR marketplace, and I think there are a lot of misconceptions, and what I always say to them is you have to think of PR as kind of this cloud over your organization. Don't think of it as like a line item or something under marketing. Think of it as your entire perception of your brand, and it really starts from day one. You know, it isn't like, you know, oh, we're ready to launch, we need to think about PR. It's like you're really thinking about it from the inception and creating your voice and kind of your message and your brand and who you want to be. And then to me, it's, you know, it's really about kind of parsing out media relations and social and content and all those things under the PR umbrella. So I think a lot of it's just an education process, and I'm sure you deal with this, you know, with startups. It's like, oh, we need PR. I have 10 days and I want to be in TechCrunch. And it's like, it doesn't really work that way, you know? So I think a lot of it's just misconceptions about PR, and as it's changing so rapidly and as it's evolving, I think just kind of trying to open the conversation and dialogue so that startups can have a better understanding of what it is.
Are we using a really antiquated model of PR, even in the modern age? Doug Free!
Are we using it or is it using us? So it's evolving really quickly. And, you know, it wasn't too long ago there was a whole layer of publications that covered technology companies. They're gone. So what's happened is the business models have all fragmented because of the internet effect. The development models of how people build companies has all fragmented. And the media that covers it has all fragmented. So you no longer have media of record. So there are a couple of issues that I think you have to think about when you look at PR. I agree that it starts at the inception, but it really is, the goal of PR is to develop an awareness with an audience of your product, your company, your brand, or whatever. And so I think people need to start with, what do you want to do? And I still, today, look at press releases or look at announcements and say, What are you trying to achieve? Start over. So it's about, what's the audience? What do you want them to take away? And that should really tell you what to do, and whether that's social media, press release,
yeah,
article, or whatever.
But what do you, who is the audience, though?
Well,
I mean,
that's for you, hopefully,
yeah,
to have some sense of. As the founder, owner, whatever, it's your investors, it's your employees.
But let me ask it another way, though. So if I'm looking, let's say I'm a journalist, am I the audience? Technically, the press release is going to me first because I'm the journalist who's going to write about it, hopefully, and it gets into my inbox and I'm looking at it. So am I the audience? And then how do you communicate that to a journalist to get their attention?
I was just going to back up for 1 second. I was going to say that I think that the biggest misconception is that traditional PR is kind of done and over, and so is traditional journalism. That is absolutely inaccurate. That there, it's, you know, it's always going to be there to some degree because you need a source and you need communicators and all of those things. And I think what's confusing is that the channels have changed and the distribution channels and the methods have changed. And so when you talk about a journalist as an audience, yes, it's an audience, but they are a conduit to reaching your customer. And if mm-hmm. the founder, and what I tell founders is, if you don't know who your audience is, then it's a bit early to be thinking about media relations, because if you don't have a customer, first of all, if you don't have a customer or even understand kind of the demographic or the psychographic of the actual customer, then it's going to be very difficult to tell your story. So I think it's like understanding that framework and understanding that certainly the journalist in the relationship is an audience because you have to influence them and sway them towards telling your story.
Yeah.
But ultimately, they care about, you know, your customer and how that's going to fit into the narrative.
But going back to that whole, you know, needing an audience, needing a customer, I think a lot of startups that are bootstrap startups are taking the wrong route when it seems that they're taking the buzz that another startup got and thinking, oh, we need to make our product or our marketing kind of look like that to get that kind of attention.
So
then it goes back to, it starts at the inception, doesn't it? I mean, it goes back to your PR relationship with whoever's doing your PR should also be part of your product development, don't you think?
So you said a word that was really important. It's on my list of things to avoid, which is buzz. To me, buzz is noise without purpose, okay? Mm. And it was in the dot-com of 2000, 2002 was emblematic of
everybody
how
had buzz.
Useless that was. And I remember everybody would say, we've got to get buzz. And I remember talking to one startup and I said, well, why? And they said, we want to get a higher round of valuation or next funding. And I said, well, those are 11 people and you're using a mass market means to get to 11 people.
What year was this? What around?
1999, 2000.
Okay.
And so I think you're correct that oftentimes people get ahead of where they need to be. They haven't figured out what they really want to say or if they have anything to say. And if you look at this with the fragmentation, it's a more competitive market than ever before. Mm. Mm-hmm. So let's just take a look at the journalists. Even in a TechCrunch or a VentureBeat or a GigaOm, you have an editor. You have a business model based on advertising and clicks. You have a blogger. You, as the communication person, be it internal or a consultant, need to think about that blogger's readers, because they are going to go to their management and say, I want to go spend a day at FUBAR company.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to say, why? And so you need to have thought through why your narrative, your story makes a difference and why their readers would care. So they're a gatekeeper.
Yeah.
They are an audience to get to another audience. But you have to have a strategy for both.
I think it's really easy for startups, and this is something else I talk about when I'm speaking on panels and kind of trying to educate people about PR, is that it's my belief, and what I see is that people approaching their storytelling from a very selfish point of view, which is like, we're going to push this feature and we're going to, this is what we're doing and this is about, and it's really not about you. It's about what the journalists, their experience, if you're talking to journalists, what their experience has been in the past and what they know to be true based on, what they see, and then your audience. So I think that just shifting, I'm always, I'm like predispositioned to kind of think about shifting the thinking instead of like the mode. So it's like, if we're going to shift the thinking is stop talking about yourself and figure out how you're being a bit like beneficial to someone else.
It seems like there are two challenges there, though, right? One of them is that everyone who is writing at a tech blog is time constrained, and they have a lot of evidence about what works in terms of driving clicks to a story, mm-hmm. right? So in some senses, most bloggers are at the helm of a self-validating machine, right? So their lens of what they think is a great story is what's worked in the past. The second challenge is when technology is almost freely available, right, or very low cost, and startups are taking the approach of using technology to validate a product very quickly and get what works very fast. A lot of marketing, you know, and its relation to PR, I think, is very clear. Marketing sort of builds a story around the product and why it's useful. A lot of marketing, I think, especially in Silicon Valley, talks about product features, right? This feature is better compared to this feature. But the problem with features is that's a race to the bottom. Because if everybody's features end up start looking the same because they're all trying to compete for the same audience, you're without a story. So it seems to me that the particularly big challenge is how do you find copywriters, writers, PR professionals or veterans like yourself who can actually craft a story based on values?
So it's what you were talking about was the what. We yeah. live in an engineering culture.
Yeah.
And they love to tell you
what it does,
not why it is. Mm-hmm. So you start with the philosophical question of why.
Mm-hmm.
And then why should somebody care? And that does shift the thinking of people. It does change how they begin to approach it. Also, storytelling, Bible's still really popular, full of stories. Greek mythology.
Rebecca's named after a Bible character.
Oh, my God.
No,
but you have to bring that up.
Stories resonate. And,
yeah.
and the ability to know a story and to be able to tell a story, I don't know whether it's, you know, nurture or nature. But certainly you want people that can ask the questions about the story that will connect. I'm sure that you can tell a good story when you hear one. You just say and pick out the elements that are relevant. And I think that's a key thing.
Mm-hmm.
In a startup, I want to make 2 points. One is you should be obsessively focused with what you're doing. Because
no question.
You have no time or little time. And you're focused on your product. That makes you blind outside. So you need some kind of distance from what you're doing to figure out what's the story, unless you really have a brilliant thinker. The other point of this whole thing is you have to have somebody that backs off and can understand what are the elements that would connect with an audience in terms of why they want to know. You know, what's going on in the marketplace? Sometimes it's antithetical. Sometimes you read what's going on in the marketplace. I just had a story show up, a blog post in the LA Times, because it was the opposite of what the common knowledge and the common experience was. I knew the reporter. I said, nobody's written about this. This is the opposite of the flow. I happen to know his interest in being a contrarian or having insight. And I gave him a little story idea, and it turned into a blog in the LA Times. That was about thinking about the flow of stories and what the reader's going to be interested in.
I also think that in the engineering culture, which is, you know, obviously pretty pervasive in Silicon Valley, I think that startup founders, and this is something that I always credit Sharam and Raj with, who founded AirPR, is I was the fourth hire as the founding member of AirPR as a communicator.
So a significant hire, then.
A significant hire because of the fact that they understood. First of all, they knew that they weren't familiar with the ins and outs of the PR industry, so they wanted someone with the background. But also, they understood that they needed a communicator and someone who could help start driving that message and telling that story. And I think that far too many startups get kind of mired in the details of, you know, the development and building the product right instead of building the right product. And only a communicator that can see kind of all these different things and can pull is going to understand how to put that into a larger kind of environment.
But let's say, and this is the problem that I think a lot of developers and startup founders have, you can be a really great thinker, and there's no question that anyone building a product is a really great thinker because they're thinking about customer needs, customer acquisition, product development. They're thinking about things and putting pieces together. The fascinating thing to me about writing and storytelling, or even if you're doing it in public and you're talking, is that people tend to forget that storytelling and putting together narratives is just as much a skill as learning your times tables or your division tables or whatever, because it's simple. Let's talk about the how. Even if you're someone who thinks that you don't have really good skills with language, you can take the 5-6 elements of every story, who, what, where, why, when, and how, and break them down in your spare time, and maybe you don't know them all at once, right? Think of someone else in mind. And it's just like learning that 2 times 2 is 4. You don't have to think every time, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, or write it out. If you keep doing it, if you keep doing it, you start realizing that the more time you spend looking at the thing that you're trying to explain, distancing yourself from it, going back to it and changing it, you find the thing that was hidden before. And people think that the end result, you need to have the skill right up front. It's like an instant baked cookie or something. That's not how it works. Real storytelling involves, I think, practicing over time, listing out literally, because writing is writing, right? It's not something you can just do in your head. This is what I think the what is. And maybe over time it changes, but if you keep going back to it like you would a diary, and you see myself always reiterating what I say over and over and over again, it's because that is how I'm trained as a thinker. I was a master's in fine arts student with creative writing, and in addition to being exposed from classics from Greek to like postmodern poetry and the surrealists, I had to spend hours every week writing and rewriting, writing and rewriting, tearing things up, excising things, and drafting things for a single piece of work every week. And that what that does is it formulates a habit in your head that when you're looking at something and when you're looking at trying to say something to some person, you're constantly formulating and reformulating what it is that you want to say until you hit on the thing that you need.
But that's an expert skill, and I think you're touching on another point, which is in a startup, every headcount is critical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay? And I got asked the other day, I was in a conversation with an interesting company that's making app stacks. And sounds critical.
Classy. Sounds
right.
Sexy.
App stack?
Yes. App stack? It's essentially the means by which you could implement an open source application. It has built into it the database and so forth.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, it's easy to implement. It'll run. And she was saying, should I hire an agency? Should I hire an individual? And I asked them how many people they were, and they were, you know, less than 20 people. And I said, don't hire an agency and don't hire a person, an individual internally. You're not at a point where you need that headcount, but you probably don't have that skill in-house. And I said, tell me what your customers say. And in a short conversation, I picked out two key elements that their customers are saying that were core to their brand. It just works, and you can trust us. I said, that's fantastic. She said, I never would have gotten that. So she's thinking differently. My recommendation was to find an individual who's done this with startups, mm-hmm. you know, and work with them or work with an organization like yours so that they can manage their resources appropriately, but they don't have that skill internally. So where a company is, a startup is, and their size has mm-hmm. a lot to do with how do they bring this skill on board,
yeah.
and how do they value it.
But going back to what you said, sorry, is that you really, I'm thinking that you're saying that just find the simple things that your customers love and find a way to reiterate that
sure.
to different people.
But it was and self-evident it's just, to me, and she didn't even see it.
Clearly, but what's great about what you're saying is that's actually a really simple thing to do once you figure out that that's what you have to do. You don't think so?
No, I do
And
not.
Lean in a little more to the microphone.
Okay, yeah. I don't. I think your brain needs to be wired that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, I think more often than not, people...
Well, liberal arts majors.
Yeah, exactly. Philosophy and psychology. Yeah, it's like...
I can channel my John
McLaughlin. By the way, you got super deep like 5 minutes ago, and so I want to go back. I want to go back. You just went there.
Wait, I'm going to do my McLaughlin group thing real quick. The future, liberal arts people, Rebecca Iliff. Go ahead.
Oh, my God. My parents would be so proud, by the way. All that money.
We're all liberal arts majors, and I remember my father telling me...
Oh, God.
By the way.
I remember my father... I want to tell this to all those engineers and developers and startup founders out there who think they're pursuing a worthless, wilting dream. I remember my father in the driveway as I was heading off to Syracuse University for my free master's education, a three-year program, completely free. He said to me, like, I know this is great that it's free and it's a really great thing to have a master's, but I don't know what the hell you're going to do with this
yeah.
thing.
Yep.
And I'm like, I will show you what I'm going to do. Yeah. I'm going to make my own company. And I did, but now I'm doing this.
So I actually had, there's a lot of points going on. There's like a lot of threads here, but I was going to go back to the kind of what you were bringing up before around like having critical thinkers and people that aren't numbers people. I mean, it's kind of a running joke in our company now that like, don't show me like a spreadsheet or like a graph. Like I don't care. Like, don't show me that. Like, just tell me what you need and I will figure out how to words and I will communicate in that way. Like that's, you know, but it's like, don't, I'm not a numbers person and I can do that, but it's not, but my brain operates differently. And so I think that the problem is that we haven't figured out how to value things that are qualitative. And so I think that it's been a struggle for a very long time to really put a value on, okay, this qualitative kind of information, the critical thinking and things like that. But I think now there is a shift happening. I mean, I really see it where communicators are being valued more. They're being brought into organizations a little bit sooner. People are starting to understand that someone who can have a conversation, who can create a point of view, who can write, who can do all these things, has more value than they did, you know, 10 years ago. And these trends kind of go, you know.
Is that true? More value than they had 10 years ago? I mean, she's basically saying that the work vertical you worked up through
that is not
had no value in the 70s,
80s,
or 90s.
Are you trying to cause a
yes.
fight? Yes. Okay.
Doug Free.
So
there's a lot more competition for awareness in the marketplace. Realize, just like there's a finite amount of land, there's a finite amount of space
talent
you can occupy in your audience's consciousness.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And so in a fragmented marketplace, you also need to think about focus, because you're much more – you ready for this one?
No, but you're going to help me focus, so I'm
much more likely to drown as a startup than to suffocate. Meaning,
oh yeah.
Meaning, there's a lot of things you can go do, but you know, if you do them all, you'll drown. So sit back and say, which of the influencers for my audience are the most powerful? And that's not easy to do, and there are professionals that can help you do that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, hopefully, you can find a half dozen people. Follow those people. I don't mean stalk them every breath you take.
Sometimes that works.
But read what they write, understand them, and if you can engage with them, because there's both the virtual relationship, which you're excellent at, and the one-to-one relationship. And if you can augment both, that's really good. And you start with that kind of focused approach to communications. And one of those people may be a blogger, one may be a New York Times reporter. Doesn't matter. So I think in a fragmented world, trying to focus on the five or six things, people or influencers that are important to you is great. Did you see that color wheel of social media that was
the
around?
Literally thousands of different platforms and apps that you can use?
On how would you pick the right channel or strategy?
But this is where I want to jump in here. In addition to, we need to figure out how do you help people who are drowning. I think let's get back to that in a second. But in to your point about how do you choose the right channel to express your message, here's what I believe. I see this, and I'm dealing with, you know, tens of thousands of startups. I don't talk to each and every one of them, but I think, you know, people, when I talk to people about this, people are surprised how few tools I actually use to figure out what to say and how to say it, and how many few platforms in which I do that. And the reason is simple. Even though the relationship is virtual, and even though we're talking about language or video or images, it's essentially true that all you have to do is find out the right people who are aligned with your values and get to know them. And it really is about relationships. And I think where PR has always been very clear about its mandate is in that it's not about how effing great your company is and how I have to convince somebody that it's great. It's that I have spent the time for you to develop relationships that you cannot purchase, right? That you cannot just bowl over with a simple statement of value. It's that you know what their values are, you're aligned with those values, you share them in a relationship with them, and when the time is right, and when the geography is correct, and when the product blends with that geography and that consumer marketplace and that idea, the time is right to tell that story.
But you're talking about the intangible value, not in the value as in like monetary value.
But it's an intangible value, but it is a practical practice to get to that point. It's like nothing arrives out of Zeus's head, especially if you're building a product. You can't just pull your product out of your head, slap it on a journalist's desk and say, this is so amazing, how could you not want to talk about this?
You're talking a little bit about, let me just have an anachronism here.
Please, bring that in.
I remember when the contracts would be about the mailing list.
Yeah.
Mm.
About where you would send press releases. And I discourage people from doing press releases. It is the lowest common denominator. It is the difference between, you know, getting a little email saying, hey, it was nice to see you, or a text, and getting a handwritten note where you go, well, they took some time. Mm-hmm. So a press release, think about how many press releases the journalist gets, and they're assuming that's the amount of effort you're going to put behind it. So that's really anachronistic in terms of that. But relationships you're right, and that's what's unique also about Silicon Valley and about locality, is wherever your audience is, you need to have some kind of purchase on what the reality is. And that's one of the challenges.
In that audience,
Microsoft,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's one of the reasons Microsoft has this campus here.
And they have BizSpark.
And so forth.
Yeah.
That was an awesome plug. Again, you guys are brilliant at that.
But let me tell you.
You're a PR person and you're, it was great though.
I don't know what I am. But
I am, yeah, I was like, and you're.
But the reason, you know, the reason BizSpark exists, like it's raison d'être. That's French for that raison d'être.
To exist.
The reason for it to exist is not just to give free software to people. And we don't even use the word free. We say.
At no cost.
We say at no cost because literally there is no cost to get on that platform or to use that technology. But the real reason for giving that to them is it formulates a relationship, and it's all about helping the other person, the other startup, build something great so that they can get on to their customer's mindset. Like, it's all about, we have all of these partnerships. We have, you know, many thousands of them around the world as a Microsoft organization. And you talked in your last radio show gig with me about embodying PR, like it's just something that you do. I think, and I, in the year and a half that I've been here, BizSpark sort of embodies PR because it embodies this relationship with thousands of different people. And it's literally this sort of mental and physical and location channel, if you're a startup, to get into not only the Microsoft relationships with people, but relationships with other startups and other founders and investors.
And I think BizSpark is a great example and kind of like a shining example of exactly how PR operates now. That, I mean, it is.
Well, that's very. I'm very grateful for that.
You can pay me later.
Okay, sure. Yeah, we don't do that though.
No, we
just
never.
We don't do that.
That was a joke. That was a really bad joke. But I mean, it's true. It's like you've built a community, and you're educating, and you're engaging, and you're, you know, being helpful and giving people tools. But you know, the end of that is at some point Microsoft will benefit from that, right? So. I think that it's a really interesting way of getting in front of your audience and that doesn't feel salesy or promotional or pushy. So
I'm just talking to people online about that.
Yeah. By the way.
Thank you very much.
You're
I was
welcome.
Listening, and while you were talking,
yeah,
I was tweeting with people.
Multitasking.
I was tweeting. I twatted.
Which they've shown doesn't work. Let me give some. For just the sake of it, because we're all just so accomplished
all right
and
now.
Brilliant here.
Yeah, we are.
And we aren't arguing.
I tell you what.
We need a little argument here.
So,
can't
I
even
be
tell
prescriptive
you.
Okay. If you're a startup. First, who is your customer? And companies pivot all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, that is probably your number one, because when should you start spending any amount of your limited resource and time thinking about PR as is formally known or informally known? And when you talked about locality and product, and you were really talking about brand, and brand happens when your customer's experience with a product or service is reflected back.
Exactly.
Good brands, you don't have to do anything. What they get going, and you kind of, you know, maybe,
Ferrari.
Well, it's incoming. You're just managing
right.
the incoming.
And you,
and the
you create a tone and a voice for mm-hmm. it and so forth, but your audience is doing it. PR is something different. I think you have to think about who's your audience, because there's a lag or a slowdown in the consumer social media startup space, mm-hmm. which started about 18 months to 2 years ago. And now there's a lot of focus on enterprise. Mm-hmm. If you're going into the enterprise market, there's a whole different set of expectations of that audience around credibility. And with bloggers not being held to the kind of standards
yeah.
that even
FX,
the Wall
yeah,
Street
sure.
Journal is or something, that's right. a problem. Reliability, right? You know, scalability. There are things that when you're selling B2B mm-hmm. And an enterprise, it's different than when you're selling an app to find, you know, the best, you know, restrooms for changing babies in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Great app, different audience. And so you really have to think that through, because it might be better to be in a stealth mode mm-hmm. until you're ready to say something interesting either about the market.
But should you be working on that relationship anyway, even if you're in stealth mode? You shouldn't even approach people.
I wouldn't, because
I disagree.
Well,
actually
depends.
Say why not.
Who are you? I'm a communicator, so I work on relationships all the time, and probably about a third of my friends are journalists.
Okay.
All right? And I go to ball games with them and concerts and double date and so forth. But the key is, you know, if you're a founder or if you're an engineer
mm-hmm.
and you have the issue of getting your product dialed in in the next 3 weeks or having lunch with a journalist, I'd probably have lunch. I would probably focus on the product until I was ready to say something. So, you know, you could argue that if you have a third party that you're working in your interest to develop those relationships, but it's a resource issue. And I don't know that it's always in your best interest to be in that conversation, because there are people that do have something actionable at that time for that reporter to write about at that
time. And you don't want to waste the reporter's time either.
The reason I disagree is because I believe that the relationship starts from less of like, this is what I have coming, you know, coming down the pipe. And it's really more like, I want to have a relationship with you because I know that down the road there's going to be something for me to talk to you about, and I just want to get to know you. And
but so, how is that not manipulative, though?
Of course it's manipulative.
Right?
All business is manipulative.
Yeah, but I think, again, I've watched...
In a good way.
Okay, good.
Really skilled entrepreneurs and CEOs do this, and it's really coming from a genuine place of, hey, I'm in the space, and you're in the space, and what? You're going to say something?
I'm agreeing with you, except you can't be who you're not. So I have met a lot of very brilliant engineering types that don't make eye contact, and they're nerds. I mean, you can't sit in a room without being uncomfortable with them because they're social, and they shouldn't be out doing that.
That's correct.
So I think you have to find out who you are and what's your voice and be authentic. So, yes, if you happen to connect with those people and enjoy their company and have something to talk about in the overarching industry, and you've been a founder before, of course. But if you're really talking about, I have 14 hours in the day or however long you work at a startup, I would be economic until I had something actionable to work with.
So what do you do then? What do you not do to cut corners in that kind of scenario? What would you say, Doug, you've seen over the years as good don't do examples?
Don't do press releases.
Okay. No press releases.
A press release today is
commoditizing your news.
Is a legal document. Okay, what I can see is it's a document of record. Because particularly if you're a public company or if your stock is being traded on a gray market and you're pre-public, there's, you know, fiduciary requirements about disclosing information.
What you've said publicly.
Right, and so you need some, so putting it on the wire is a statement of record. But I think press release, reporters want to get information that others don't have.
Yeah.
Okay, so press releases are a waste of time.
I think
having blogs that don't have a personality or a voice are a waste of time.
Correct.
I think tweets about the fact you went to the Giants game or you were at Napa is a waste of time. Mm. You know, if you're a personality and you're being paid to promote Pepsi, that's one thing. But if you're... So think about your audience and how to spend your time in a way that is valuable to you. And I was asked one time, how do I know a good story, or how do I create a good story? And I said, I look at stories in terms of what would interest me, because I actually am kind of like a journalist with my academic background and my interests and what I read and who I hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy for me, or easier, because I'm not an engineer and I'm not a finance person.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't waste time making a bunch of buzz and noise. I'd really be focused. What does my audience want to hear? What do we have to say that's unique or compelling? You know, I'd be listening to what the competition is doing, if there is competition, those kinds of things.
I mean, another don't is like, don't build a crappy product that no one needs or wants.
Right, of
course,
yeah.
But I think that there are many startups.
But that's easy to do in this day and age.
It's really easy, and it's also, and I would also say,
we've made it so easy to build a crappy product.
I would also say that not every startup is pressworthy, and you just have to understand that, you know what, no one really cares. And until you have a better story and a better product, and you can kind of prove in the market that you're interesting, then you can't pay anyone any amount of money to tell your story, because no one's gonna read it. No one cares. And so I think it's kind of like, don't be narrow-minded about what's really happening, right? Like, you have to be very, very realistic about your product and where you're at, and listen to people who know more than you do about them.
Your company, AirPR, kind of makes it easy for companies to target actually the right PR professional or the right journalist. Explain how your platform works, and couldn't it be that most startups could actually test an A/B test whether or not their message has any validity by using your platform in a way?
So one of the products we have, the one that's public right now.
And you are a BizSpark startup, by the way. Just want to make sure
we are.
Understand that.
Plug that. There you go.
Marketplace, AirPR's Marketplace is a BizSpark startup.
Thank you.
Nice. And we love it. And that's why I'm here.
Yes.
Yeah, clapping in the back. So what we do is make it very streamlined for a startup who is ready for PR to source and find a PR independent or a small firm that's in their budget range. So you're not, you know, when you're a startup, and you alluded to this earlier, you're not ready to pay 15 to 20 grand a month for an agency. You simply don't have the bandwidth, and you don't even have the resources to be able to manage that. Agencies need management, they need information, they need resources. So, you know, the marketplace right now is intended for startups who are looking to spend between 3 and 10K a month or $20,000 over 3 months on a project to launch their product or to get, you know, to enhance the brand and get visibility in the marketplace. However, I would say that I almost see it from a different perspective, which is that we have the best PR pros in the country. And so it's almost the PR pros saying, like, nope, they're not really ready yet, and here's why. And so it's almost this education process.
Yeah,
that's
it ends
happening.
Up being a training thing.
It ends up being a training thing and a very simple way to not waste anyone's time because we vetted both sides. So I also have some data around what I think companies should spend just based on what we've seen.
Yeah.
Some interesting, like, you know, we actually released it on TechCrunch a few weeks back. But what we're seeing is that a startup with, you know, $500,000 to $4 million in funding will spend an average of $5,000 a month for a 5 month engagement. And so that's really what you're looking at. So $25,000 over 5 months is about what you would need to launch and really kind of get yourself out there to understand, you know, how the market's responding, what your customer's saying, if people are interested. So that's just an interesting number because, again, we've seen almost 1,500 companies come through at this point. So that's just something to keep in mind for the startups that are watching, is that if you think that you're going to hire a PR person for $2,000 a month and get into, you know, Time's Techland blog, you're out of your mind. And it's absolutely unrealistic. And so a lot of this, again, is educating startups around what makes sense and what's realistic and what's not.
What they can do is do an inventory of the people inside the company, because there may be somebody in the company, and it could be the bottle washer or the intern, who can write and is a storyteller. So there's something they can do with a relatively low investment to begin to create a voice and identity on the site. And that's passive. You're not pitching.
I still think you need a professional, though. I still really believe that you need some consulting, because I've seen it, and I've seen it done very badly. And saying something badly or poorly is worse than saying nothing at all. So I think that it's not often that happens, that you would find an intern that because if they could actually create a voice and they could actually...
Didn't Donald Trump say that necessity is the mother of invention? No. But anyway, the point is, don't you think that there is a middle ground here?
I would never quote Donald Trump. So.
That was the point. He never said that. Don't you think that there is a middle ground here that's born out of necessity? She's saying, you don't have time or money to afford this person, but you may have something that you really need to say.
Correct. And if you look around and say everybody here is either tasked with something that they can't take their eye off of or doesn't have that skill set, then you should do something. But I'm looking at, what can you do before you're ready to spend $25,000? What can you do to begin to at least start a foundation to say, here's what we're working on, here's what we're thinking about, here's a marketplace, you know, maybe education, healthcare, whatever. So you begin to get some level of identity there, because it could be simply to recruit engineers, it could be simply to recruit talent. Sure. Is there somebody inside the company? And the other thing is, we haven't talked about at all, is internal communications. And your most powerful PR tool is your employees. So getting everybody on the same page. I was at InfoSeek when we became Go Network, and in that process we had a company in Seattle named Starwave. We had ESPN.com. We have ABCNews.com. We had InfoSeek. And then we had the great mothership of Disney in Burbank. And my job was to try and make sense out of this stew. and get the employees to feel good about being part of this great adventure and being able to go out and explain what the Go Network portal
was. So making them into ambassadors, in a sense.
And educating them as part of the PR process.
Because that can happen in any many ways.
But at a startup, when there's like four or five people and like two of them not.
And I have a solution. But I have a solution for it.
We're talking about
BizSpark?
It is BizSpark.
We're talking about the size of the startup. So there's startups with four or five people, and there's startups with 300 people.
Yeah.
And I think it depends on where you are.
Yeah.
And what I was saying is if you're before you're ready to bring on a professional consultant, you may be able to do something to create some kind of identity or foundation without going outside.
Yeah, well, and so, you know, just to weigh in on what the audience is saying, Sumant Dubé, who just joined the BizSpark program, he said, $25,000, I think I'd rather spend that on product development. Now here's where I'm going to offer this wonderful... Yeah,
I hate what you're saying, Sumant Dubé.
You're wrong.
And Sumant, by the way, Dubé is a great name.
That's a great name.
It's a great name, and you should use that in as many ways as you can.
You should name a product.
Here's the solution, and this is the kind of ways I've been trying to help the BizSpark community. So we do this thing on Twitter called hashtag BZPitch, so BizSpark Pitch. And so what I tell people is if you think you have something that's worth paying attention to, and you can do it in 140 characters or less with that hashtag, tweet to BZPitch, and what happens is you get like maybe 50 or 60 people at a time over the course of an hour who are like, yeah, okay, this is what I think. And what that does is that actually does two things. It's probably not giving attention to TechCrunch, because TechCrunch is probably, you know, Colleen Taylor, who's Loyal Electron on Twitter, at Loyal Electron, she's somebody you could try to pitch your company to. She's probably not looking at BZPitch and trying to figure out what's the hot company. But what it is doing is that it's telling the whole community who is watching that hashtag that there are other people like them working on something in a bootstrap way, and they can give assistance to each other. And what we've seen with that device, that simple tweeting pitching effect, is that now you have people who are in Malaysia and Africa, like in Ghana or something, talking to each other, right? And
conversations are great, but it's not necessarily going to get you.
No, let me tell you why that's great. Let me tell you why. And
from the social
what
media
happens is, what happens is that over time, different people in different areas start building a mesh together. And different values and different characters and different sort of ideas start meshing with each other. And then what happens is the more you start talking on the BizSpark channel about your own startup, the more people who are going to start paying attention to you. And you can actually, in a minimal amount of time and with a minimal amount of effort, start building up a bedrock for those relationships and that kind of attention that you're going to need later. So what happens is BizSpark sort of feeds on itself and grows rather than feeds on itself and cannibalizes itself. It's a recursive cycle. And I think what often goes missing is that people keep thinking about PR and attention as being a milestone event kind of thing. Let's build up to a big announcement on this blog.
And that's part of it.
And then we're gonna get 10,000 users. And the problem is there's a lot of erosion when that happens. But there's not a lot of erosion. There's an up and to the right glide slope.
You're getting dirty looks from both of us.
So that's
Doug Free.
That is a habit that is consistent with every company I've worked for, small, medium, and...
Which habit?
The habit of having something to say and moving up to a point around an event.
Like a big event, okay.
Right, right. And then going, you know, not radio silent, but the signal dropping way down. We carry on a conversation here on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
But Microsoft really, and it's true with any company I've been with, to get everybody focused and their attention and energy around something that needs to be a show, a launch, an event. It's human nature. I fought it. Mm-hmm. You can create conversations, and Microsoft has something called Underground Tours, where they bring people in to Redmond, and they have them see things they wouldn't normally see in the labs and so forth, and then they're not involved in news or features or so forth. But it gives them a flavor of what's going on. But that's also the challenge, is people look at news as the way to get press attention. And since people get paid by the click these days, you need a headline that's going to draw somebody in. So it's news, or it's rumor, or it's scandal, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, we painted a high school and all the kids are happy is what should be being covered, but that doesn't get clicks. So how do you actually create that conversation going in the body corporate or the body startup? It's really difficult to do.
Yeah. So to go back to Simone Bonavart, what's her first name?
Simone de Beauvoir? She was the feminist.
Right. She was
no, you're Simone Dubé, I believe. Simone's very Simone offended Dubé. Right now, I'm sure.
Simone
Dubé. I love your name. If you were sitting right here, I would actually ask you if I could change names with you because it's not fair. But to go back to their point, I think that, you know, $25,000 sounds, I'm just throwing a number out there based on actual data that we've seen. And that is specifically with regards to like media relations. So social is something that should be happening kind of at some point all the time, I think, and can be a great tool, but it's different than media relations. And that's again why, you know, the PR environment is changing so much because there are there's content marketing now, there's social, there's media relations, there's speaking engagements, there's all of these different things.
Yeah, but that's where I feel like I'm actually not antagonistic to your belief, because what I'm saying is that it's going back to the big color wheel that Doug was talking about. There's two things that I think are wrong with the social environment, right? One of them is that people think social, like you're saying, social encompasses everything and that it replaces everything that you used to do. It's not, I don't think that's true. I don't think social media goes in and just says, we don't need PR anymore, we don't need media relations anymore, right? Mm-hmm. It's seen in everybody's mind as a solution, and that ends up making it a morass, which leads to the second problem, is that since so many people are trying to find signal in the noise, everybody's signaling turns into noise in itself. So there is no signal in your signal, right? And so what I keep saying is it's more like a methodology, and your media relations piece is a stage in tiers that you get to a certain place,
sure.
Right? And yours, in RPR's case, seems to be gathered around the data of you've already gotten a little bit of funding. I just think that at the PR, at the bootstrap stage, when you're not yet ready to get funding from an investor, or you don't even know who your investor will be, you should already be at that stage of not just talking about your product. You don't use Twitter to just sort of talk and talk about how awesome you are. You use Twitter to get to know people and to listen and to figure out what are people talking about. And for me, it's a six-step process. Figure out internally what your values are, right? We were talking about this earlier, you know, to talk about Apple computers. If Apple Computer had ever said in their product marketing, we built a graphic UI, isn't it great? It's a lot more expensive than other computers out there. You want one? People wouldn't have bought it. They didn't do that. They said, do you think differently than other people? And they made a why. So you start with your why. The second stage is you don't say anything about your why. You figure out who else has that why in mind. Form a relationship. That's the third step. Fourth step is listen again, right? You're not there to tell people what to think anymore. The fourth step, as you go, climb down that step, is then you start articulating the why, and then you start telling a story, and then you listen again to figure out who's actually listening to that story. And then you invite them on board to help tell that story with them. And that's what I think is happening. I think that's what social, that you have to build a signal. A lot of people think that you have to seek out an influencer and get the influencer to trumpet it for you because they've got a signal. I can tell you there's a lot of influence out there who are farting. They're not signaling, right? What you do is you create and cultivate your own signaling. And that's what people start paying attention to.
Yeah, true, but I think you also have...
Lean in a little more. Doug Free.
There we go. We also have influencers that we notice other influencers pick up their content, repost, and so forth. And they're clearly experts within the experts.
Yes.
And we want to focus on that. One thing I do think is valuable about social media or online media, and all media is social to some extent.
Sure. It's people.
Public relations
media is Soylent Green.
Relations with the public, which would be social. There we go. Semantics. Is that when you're doing a campaign, social media can be a great idea of whether how it's landing. What's the reaction? Does it work? I remember sitting...
Sentiment, yeah, sure.
5 or 6 years ago across from a young woman in a panel, PR Week, and she was at LinkedIn, and she was talking about... She was a math background in statistics, and she was talking about looking at the data that they could pick up since they did all their marketing and all their PR online and their product is online, and it's all one. And I was trying to encompass that and not feel ancient, but it was feedback that they could get relatively quickly, relatively unfiltered on was there resonance with their campaign.
Or was this a deaf
right, or was it just like, you know, a riff shot? Yeah. That would be over the head, a riff shot.
Well, I think social, too, has greatly enhanced the media machine, because now you can really see, like, if an article is published, if it gets 500 tweets versus two, like, that's kind of really the only metric at this point that we have in terms of how valuable or how much something is heard. So I think that social is a layer there, and it's an important layer to more of the traditional and digital media.
Well, and I would add, I think there are other metrics. One of those other metrics, I think, for startups out there is building lists with people of people that you notice are returning back to the platform or returning back to the message, right? Because it's you're doing, what you're saying there, and I think this is where we have borrowed from traditional television and advertising publicity. We assume that bulk readership or bulk attention means validation. And oftentimes, we don't really know, because you don't, like, up until a certain time, a TV was a pretty dumb box. The Nielsen ratings were just based on, did this person click on that channel and watch it?
Right.
And it was already a percentage. It was a statistical analysis. Now we have a mechanism that you're talking about where someone will retweet it. Retweeting doesn't always, you know, mean I validate your argument. But I think what you look for is habits of use of your message, or habits of interaction with
amplification,
you. Amplification. So amplification is the first signal in that. The second part of it is the return.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you want to talk about it in a metaphor, it's like you're looking for an echo, in a sense. It's sonar. You're basically trying to say, if I say things a few enough times, do enough people come back to the message? Not does the message come back to me more?
Well, and in terms of PR, is the message that's getting returned back the message that I want out there?
You know, that's, and the advantage you have with Twitter is that you can understand, like you're saying, whether or not that person actually understood the message because they're talking back to you. This has been great, guys. We're actually running out of time. Do you guys want to come back again, or do you want to say one final thing? Do you want to plug something, Doug?
Yeah, I want to plug a guy named Regis McKenna.
Okay.
Who literally wrote the book on high-tech marketing. And if you want to know why Steve Jobs thinks the way he does, he looked at Sony and listened to Regis McKenna. Mm-hmm. So McKenna talks about marketing companies and market-driven companies.
Yes.
Marketing companies sell what they make. Market-driven companies look at what the market wants and tries to shadow it. And the other thing I'd say is, when you're thinking about your story and who to contact, think about what interests you and think about who you read that you think has insight and relevance. And those are probably, you know, that's probably the story that you should tell, or that those instincts will guide you. And those are probably the influencers you want to reach out to. Thanks.
Well, wait, one more question. Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Get to plug something.
I would like to plug Microsoft BizSpark. No. Thank you.
What is that?
And also, really, is this, you know, if you're a startup and you're watching and you're looking for a PR resource beyond Doug's amazing advice and what BizSpark is offering, AirPR does provide a lot of resources. Even if there's, you know, you don't have the budget for PR, we have a really great blog that's very insightful. I've actually had Doug did an interview on the blog.
And, I did do
and
that.
I'm always willing to have, you know, a 20-30 minute conversation with someone about, you know, and just really be helpful, because I think that it's going to take, I mean, the startup landscape is wide and widening, and it's going to take a lot of people helping to drive the good ones forward. And, you know,
I think so too. And the question we have, the last question we have in the audience is there any time in the development of your company or your product where you're too late to do PR, or is PR ready anytime?
There may be a point in your company when it's too late to have a company.
If you're bankrupt,
right? Yeah. So you no,
your employees leave.
No, you fast fail.
Yeah,
I mean, when you go to a Pando Daily event, not the pitch, but and I went to one, and the first five people told me almost exactly the same pitch. That's a dead indicator that there's a bubble there, and you're in a market that's not got anything. But in terms of if you got a viable company, there's no time at which it's too late.
Mm.
In fact, you know, you may be in quote a self-imposed or accidental stealth mode, and now you're going to debut.
Yeah, debut. I think it's less about...
Dubé, you're going
too,
to debut.
I think it's... Is it less about, is it too late to do PR? And it's more about, am I just way too late to the market for anyone to care?
Yeah, I think it's more of a company problem.
It's more a company.
So, thank you much, Doug Free. Thank you for offering, I don't know how many decades of PR excellence.
Too many.
Too many.
Happy Bastille Day this Sunday.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Thank
Bastille
you for
Day.
My Doug sandwich, by the way.
Yes, Doug sandwich today. nothing happened. What you're seeing is on air. There's nothing.
Oh, God.
And thank you, Rebecca Iliff, for coming. And for all of you folks out there who are bootstrapped, drowning in all the things you have to do every day, remember, BizSpark is your source for companionship, compatibility, support, and honesty, and a community. So we're 45,000 plus startup strong, but we have an audience of well over 200,000 people. Those people are paying attention. So if you want to use Twitter to get in touch with us, or if you want to find us on Facebook, or you want to be in our LinkedIn group, you can, and then you can register at bizspark.com. And thank you for watching the BizSpark show. At 3 p.m. Pacific, I'm interviewing Jermaine Dupri, the guy who founded or discovered Crisscross, and he's going to make you jump. Did you like how I fit that in there?
Are we going to be here for that, by the way?
You could if you want to. So Jermaine Dupri, 3 p.m. Pacific on this channel. I love you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.